they're the ones who will sort of have final say when they pass an appropriations omnibus, either later this month or more likely sometime in January.
Defense spending could bring more missiles to Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Arctic report card's bleak outlook for sea ice levels.
The changes that are happening in the Arctic will not stay in the Arctic. These changes will impact all of our lives.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
President Donald Trump today signed the 2018 National Defense Authorization Act into law.
This historic legislation demonstrates our unwavering commitment to our men and women in uniform, the greatest fighting force in the history of the world, and we're making it a lot better than even that.
The law authorizes nearly $700 billion for the military, about $150 billion above the spending cap established by the Budget Control Act. The amount is a big increase over 2017 spending. Senator Dan Sullivan praised the bill's inclusion of more money for missile defense, including $200 million for a new missile field at Fort Greely near Fairbanks and 20 new interceptors that would be housed there. Sullivan is a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee and one of the committees responsible for drafting the annual authorization bill. The new law sets policy, and even though it includes dollar figures, it does not guarantee funding. Matt Vallone, research director at the consulting firm Avascent Analytics, says the authorizing law is more of an opening bid in the yearly debate about how much to spend on defense. Vallone says the members of the appropriations committees usually aim for a lower number.
But appropriators are the ones that make the final decision on what spending is going to be, and they're the ones who will sort of have final say when they pass an appropriations omnibus, either later this month or more likely sometime in January.
Vallone says he expects the final spending bill will be a few billion less than what the law signed today authorizes. But with the North Korean threat looming, Vallone says he expects Congress will approve increased spending on missile defense. Alaska's Department of Revenue released its Fall Revenue Sources book today. Department of Revenue Commissioner Sheldon Fisher sent the book to Governor Bill Walker's office, and along with it, he sent a letter. In it, he says, while the state is forecasted to make more money this year than it did last year, it is still spending more than it makes. The state continues to rely heavily on energy to fund government operations. That means oil prices are an important number in calculating the state's future budgets. Next year, the department forecasts an average price of $56 per barrel. That's up slightly from its spring oil price prediction, and according to the report, oil markets seem to be stabilizing. The department expects annual prices to hold at about $60 per barrel per year for the foreseeable future. But oil prices would likely need to be at least $90 per barrel to balance the budget next year. Fisher wrote that he believes using a portion of the permanent fund investment earnings to pay for state government is necessary to balance the budget. One bright spot in the prediction is that oil production has increased for the last 2 years. The Department of Revenue predicts it will bump up again in 2018 before dropping in 2019. Still melting and melting fast. That's the basic takeaway from the federal government's annual Arctic report card released today. It finds that Arctic ocean temperatures are increasing and sea ice is declining at the fastest rate in at least 1,500 years. Rachel Waldholz from Alaska's Energy Desk reports.
The report's first line says it all. Arctic shows no sign of returning to reliably frozen region of recent past decades. Instead, everything is warming, ocean temperatures, air temperatures, permafrost temperatures. Sea ice is shrinking, the tundra is greening, and it's all happening at a stunning pace. So fast, in fact, that researchers presenting the report kept returning to one word: unprecedented. Jeremy Mathis with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration put it most succinctly. The Arctic, he said, is now going through the most unprecedented transition in human history. And that should concern everyone.
We want every single American to know that the changes that are happening in the Arctic will not stay in the Arctic. These changes will impact all of our lives.
Mathis compared the Arctic to the planet's refrigerator.
But the door to that refrigerator has been left open, and the cold is spilling out, cascading throughout the Northern Hemisphere.
Impacts outside the region include the ripple effects from the melting Greenland ice sheet, a major driver of global sea level rise. And researchers increasingly believe that a warming Arctic is contributing to more extreme weather events across North America, though the mechanism isn't well understood. One of the more eye-popping statistics came from Emily Osborne, also with NOAA. She reported on a review analyzing things like lake sediments and ice cores to reconstruct the past.
This data set shows that the magnitude and sustained rate of warming of the sea ice decline in the 21st century is unprecedented over the last 1,500 years and likely longer.
Then there was Vladimir Romanovsky, a permafrost researcher at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He reported that in 2016, observational sites across the Arctic reported their highest permafrost temperatures on record. Mathis said the rapid changes taking place in the Arctic now have a momentum of their own. The process called Arctic amplification, or Arctic darkening. As bright sea ice, snow, and glaciers are replaced by darker water and land, the Arctic reflects less heat and absorbs more, leading to more warming.
That great service that the Arctic has done to the planet by reflecting that heat back into space is now being absorbed and trapped in the environment.
And he said that trend is only continuing. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage.
Governor Bill Walker today announced the 20 members of the state's new climate change task force. The team's job is to come up with recommendations for how Alaska should deal with climate change. It was created by Walker in an administrative order issued this fall. The task force is led by Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. Alaskans representing a wide range of interests made the list. They include Fran Ulmer, chair of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission, BP Alaska President Janet Wiese, and North Slope Borough Assembly Chair John Hobson Jr. The team also includes experts on renewable energy and climate science. Another notable member is 17-year-old Sam Schimmel from Kenai Peninsula and St. Lawrence Island. Schimmel is Siberian Yupik and Kanaitse.
The issue of climate change is very important for Native youth because it affects our traditions, our hunting traditions, our fishing traditions, our berry picking traditions.
Schimmel wants the team to tackle solutions to problems Alaska Native communities are already dealing with because of climate change.
We must combat climate change, and we must try and slow it down, but we must also address the slow-moving emergency that our communities face. We need a definite and end result, and that result would be giving aid to the communities that allow communities to continue their traditions.
Six of the team's members were part of an earlier iteration of the group, former Governor Sarah Palin's sub-cabinet on climate change. That includes Chris Rose, executive director of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project.
Well, about 10 years has passed, and we've seen climate change accelerate. We've also seen the price of renewables come down tremendously in that decade. So I'm hoping that this time around there's a lot more action rather than recommendations.
Rose hopes a big priority will be working on improving financing for renewable energy and energy efficiency projects in Alaska. The group will meet for the first time next Monday. The governor's office wants an early draft of their recommendations by next September. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Wrangell High School is using a new app to curb bullying.
And it's not really a kind of a, you know, they send it and then they're done. It's more that it starts a conversation with a counselor at the high school.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company taking pride in its strong ties to Alaskans and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
An Alaska-based soldier from Wasilla on a combat deployment in Afghanistan has died. 24-year-old Army Staff Sergeant David Thomas Brabander was killed Monday in a vehicle accident that an Army spokesman says was not related to combat. Brabander deployed in September with the 4th Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division, stationed at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. The unit was sent to help with advising and assisting Afghan security forces. The vehicle accident happened in the eastern Nangarhar province of Afghanistan. According to a release from the governor, Brabander grew up in Wasilla before enlisting in the Army in 2012. The incident is still being investigated by the Army. Flags around the state will be flown at half staff for the remainder of the week. Senator David Wilson's actions during a confrontation with a female House aide didn't amount to sexual harassment, according to a nonpartisan investigation. Skiff Loba is the legislature's human resources manager. He reviewed surveillance video of the incident that occurred on June 15th outside of the House Speaker's chambers. Two news reporters had said that Wilson held his cell phone between the aide's legs. Loba wrote in a report released today that the video showed Wilson held his cell phone about 1 to 2 feet away from the hemline of the aide's skirt for 4 seconds. Loba found, based on eyewitness reports as well as conversation with Wilson, that Wilson's conduct was motivated by an attempt to record a conversation through a closed door, not by an unlawful discriminatory motive. Loba wrote, quote, "While Senator Wilson may have been acting with joking and friendly intentions, his actions and comments still put the House staff employee in a stressful, no-win predicament," end quote. Wilson, who also viewed the video, repeated his call for the video to be released publicly, but legislative rules prohibit the public release of Capitol surveillance video.
I feel the video footage speaks more volumes to what occurred without interpretation, and let folks make their own determination from watching the events that transpired that day.
Anchorage Democratic Senator Berta Gardner called for Wilson to apologize.
While under the definitions of harassment and assault, Senator Wilson is not guilty of that under those definitions, I think that in the common vernacular, harassment, I think that the staffer definitely felt harassed, with good reason.
The confrontation occurred when Wilson was outside the door of a meeting of House Majority members. The aide stood between him and the door. Loba wrote the aide was placed in an uncomfortable situation of following the directive of her legislative boss while also coping with another legislator's request that was contradictory to her duty. Gardner says Wilson should have recognized this.
The big problem is the difference in stature between the two of them, that she was, in a very personal way, prevented from doing her job by a senator and didn't have the authority to really make him stop. And he took advantage of that.
Wilson declined to say whether it's appropriate for him to apologize for the incident or another incident in which he slapped Anchorage Daily News reporter Nathaniel Herz. Senate Majority Leader said in a written statement that they would responsibly and transparently investigate all issues that potentially compromise a safe and respectful workplace. State prosecutors also addressed that reporter slapping incident today. The Alaska Office of Special Prosecutions won't pursue charges against Senator Wilson for the May incident. In a letter today to Juneau Police, Chief Assistant Attorney General Andrew Peterson wrote, "It is unlikely the state will be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Wilson acted with a specific intent to harass or annoy Herz." That's the standard for determining harassment in the second degree. Peterson wrote, in part, "This doesn't imply Senator Wilson's conduct is not of concern," but went on to say the resources needed for prosecution is disproportionate to the conduct. Herz recorded audio of the slap. Wilson says he wants to put the incident behind him.
"We have much more pressing matters at the state. I never had any ill will, malicious intent, or intentions toward Mr. Herz. I respect him as a journalist.
and I hope that we can continue on with a professional relationship, as I feel, since we are so secluded in Juneau, I feel journalists down there have one of the key voices to the people of Alaska to help disseminate the information that happens in Juneau.
The Senate has not taken any public action in response to the slap. The incident occurred on May 2nd. Herz had asked Wilson about a story Herz had written. It was about a bill Wilson proposed that would end a program that distributes grants to some Matanuska-Susitna Borough social service agencies. The state has released its forecast for the 2018 Togiak herring fishery. Word from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is that it's going to be a little bit larger than last season's forecast. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
The total forecasted biomass of 136,756 tons of Pacific herring this coming season will allow for a combined purse seine and gillnet harvest of 24,042 tons for the Togiak District Sac Grove fishery. That biomass is up slightly from 2017's forecast, nearly 131,000 tons. Greg Buck is the Bristol Bay Area research biologist.
Pretty much as I expected, maybe a little small and a little older than I would have predicted, but totally in the ballpark. So I expect a fairly normal run.
Area management biologist Tim Sands says last season saw more interest from the purse seine fleet than the gillnet fleet.
We were able to take most of the seine quota last year, basically all the seine quota last year, but not much of the gillnet quota because there wasn't a lot of interest from the gillnet fleet. And I don't know how things are going to shake out this year as far as how much gillnet interest there'll be, but I think we'll probably be able to take most of the seine quota again.
The forecast is calculated with an age structure model. That model relies on two sets of data, total biomass of the run and the age composition estimate of the harvest. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game collects the information during the season by flying aerial surveys and sampling the harvest. The budget for managing the Togiak herring fishery was cut in 2016, so biologists couldn't gather that data. That meant the 2017 forecast was based on historical averages going back to 1978. However, private industry contributions are allowing the research necessary for biologists to forecast the Togiak herring run to continue.
We're fully back funded. We're being funded by under a co-op agreement that organized with a number of different entities, including BBRSDA and BBSRI.
That's Greg Buck, referring to the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association and the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute. Weather conditions kept the department from flying aerial surveys during the peak of last season, so the biomass for 2018 is based on an average of previous aerial surveys and the 2017 biological data. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Golden Valley Electric Association crews are still working to repair damage to power lines caused by warm Chinook winds that blasted the interior over the weekend, especially around Delta Junction. On Monday, gusts of up to 80 miles an hour knocked over a 48-ton railroad car in Delta. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Cliff Mason says he was just making his way back Monday morning to the hotel he works at in Delta when he saw the 100-foot-long Alaska Railroad passenger car flop onto its side.
I was coming back, and I'm pulling in, and I look over to my left, and I see something moving. I'm like, what the heck? And I look over, and I just happen to see it falling right over on the edge.
Yvonne Echohawk is co-owner of Kelly's Alaska Country Inn, and she says she parked the old double-decker rail car next door to the hotel several years ago, where it had sat undisturbed until Monday.
And they were huge gusting winds. There's trees down all over the place.
Echohawk bought the rail car from the Alaska Railroad after it was put out of service in 2001. She says she'd planned to convert it into a coffee shop, and despite Monday's mishap, she still does.
We're going to pick it back up, get it real stable, and set it down on its permanent resting place.
National Weather Service climate specialist Rick Toman confirms it was indeed a blustery day in that part of the interior.
Many reports from Delta South along the Delta River there, 70 to 80 mile an hour wind gusts, a very strong Chinook.
Meanwhile, crews with Golden Valley Electric Association are still working in the area today to restore electricity in neighborhoods where it had been knocked out by trees blown over onto power lines.
We had a crew working in Delta throughout the weekend. And again, today we have a Fairbanks crew helping our line person down there.
Golden Valley spokeswoman Corrine Bradish says crews also were repairing lines around Healy over the weekend. She says they'll continue to work in the outlying areas as long as necessary.
We'll just continue doing this to get power restored until these winds die down.
Toman says they may get a breather for a day or two, but he says another Chinook is on the way.
We are not done with this. We are stuck in this very mild southerly flow aloft pattern, and it looks likely we'll have another round of strong Chinook winds through the Alaska Range passes coming up later this week.
Toman says the weather system raised temperatures into the 40s in Delta on Monday. He says the mercury climbed to 46 in Anchorage, 59 in Ketchikan, and 62 in Metlakatla. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
If you're a single person who makes less than $60,240 per year, you're eligible for federal tax credits to help pay health insurance premium costs. If you need health insurance for 2018, there's a limited window to act. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is from November 1st through December 15th of 2017. If you don't have coverage, it could be financially devastating. Sign up at healthcare.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
A Russian competitor to Alaska's proposed LNG pipeline loaded its first cargo last week. Russian gas giant Novatek reported that Russian President Vladimir Putin traveled to the remote Arctic Yamal Peninsula for the ceremonial opening of the plant. The $27 billion liquefied natural gas project is heavily funded by partners in China. It is coming online in stages. When completed, it will be almost as large as the Alaska LNG project. Last week, Alaska Gasline Development Corporation President Keith Meyer said Russia's project is competition.
No question about it. And Russia is close to China. They're building pipelines, you know, so they will be getting supply from Russia. Russia is now as an Arctic project and they've talked about more.
But he says Alaska has an edge.
When a large utility looks at Russia versus Alaska, again, Alaska stands pretty tall from a reliability and certainty standpoint and a supply security standpoint.
Meyer says Sinopec, a Chinese oil and gas company that has signed an agreement to explore Alaska's LNG project, also has a deal on a pipeline to deliver gas from Russia. Anti-bullying campaigns are increasing across the nation. These are bringing to light the scale and impact of harassment in schools. Wrangell Public Schools just rolled out an app to help address that issue. Students can now anonymously report incidents of bullying. KSTK's June Leffler has more.
Riley Hall is a behavioral health clinician at Alaska Island Community Services in Wrangell. He spends 10 hours a week at the middle and high schools offering counseling. He says bullying is a common concern for his student clients.
It can look like, you know, getting pushed around in the hallway, getting called names. It can become more violent, both physically or sexually. And now in this wonderful era of technology, it can also be electronic. So people can send out damaging emails or Facebook posts or tweets.
Hall is also part of the Wrangell Early Prevention Coalition. It is made up of coaches, pastors, and all sorts of folks who work with the youths. The group says bullying is an issue they want to tackle. One way they are doing this is with a new app for students to report incidents of bullying. The app is called Anonymous Alerts. The company that owns the app claims more than 5,000 schools are already using this product. Grants and school insurance are paying for the service. Hall and school counselors can offer support to anonymous students entirely through the app.
And it's not really a kind of a, you know, they send it and then they're done. It's more that it starts a conversation with a counselor at the high school. So and then we can kind of follow up and ask if, you know, if they're currently in danger, where it's been happening. They can tell us a little bit about who's causing the problem for them. And we can offer them help and we can offer them support while they're anonymous.
Almost a quarter of high school students in Alaska say they were bullied at school in the past year. That's according to an Alaska Department of Public Health survey released this year. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium conducted its own survey within Wrangell Public Schools. It got similar, but sometimes worse, results. Close to 40% of secondary students say they were bullied in the past month.
Research is showing that there is kind of a link between kids that get bullied at school and other psychiatric mood disorders like depression or anxiety. In extreme cases, there can be trauma symptoms.
The same state survey reports a third of all high schoolers have felt hopeless consistently for 2 weeks or more, and a fifth of students have suicide plans.
So bullying, there's kind of the conventional wisdom that it's a phase that kids go through and they get over it. And while that is true for many kids, there is some quite a bit of evidence that shows that, you know, for some kids, this can have pretty long-reaching, devastating effects.
In-person counseling sessions can curb the emotional impact, but Hall says the anonymous app gives students an extra layer of protection. Maybe they fear retaliation from the bully and want to take all precautions. Plus, it can be awkward to go to an adult and tell them about personal stuff they're going through.
We're not predicting that this is going to be something that kids are going to be utilizing every day. This is more of like a, you know, a tsunami evacuation plan. Like, if in the case a kid really needs it, it's there for them.
Rick Dormer agrees. He's Petersburg School District secondary principal. The district rolled out a similar system in 2013. Dormer says in a small town like Petersburg or Wrangell, teachers and administrators have a good pulse on what's happening at school. But it also means communities are so close-knit, it can be hard to come forward with a complaint. He says school staff tiptoe around this. They won't just go up to Johnny and say, "We've gotten reports that you're up to no good." They just keep a closer eye on suspected students, seeing if they catch anything on their own watch.
Then teachers can jump in, and it isn't, you know, someone, you know, ratted on their friend. It was, "Hey, I just saw you, you know, push that kid," as opposed to the kind of roundabout playing into the, you know, the social dynamics or the drama of schools, which is always tricky.
Wrangell's secondary school principal, Bill Schwan, says it's too early to tell how his administration will address the reports. I'll keep it on a case-by-case basis as they start coming in. In Wrangell, I'm June Loeffler.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Elizabeth Harbaugh, Zachariah Hughes, and Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Avery Lill in Dillingham, and June Loeffler in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com. And by GCI, with complete technology solutions for organizations that keep Alaska's communities and economy thriving. GCI is your partner in possibilities. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.